WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth.
Very
Charlie
good.
Becky, you ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here 95.9 WATD, coming to you live from Broadcast House. My name is Kevin Tachi, and joining me this evening, I have State Representative Kathy Lanatra.
Hello, Kevin.
Her segment is the first. We also have following Kathy is Mr. Richard Rosen. We'll talk a little bit about McGuigan's Pub and the patio, as well as a surprise guest to talk a little bit about pigeon racing. Interesting concept. So we'll start. The representative, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
How goes the battle? What's new?
Oh, gosh. We had a weekend filled with high school graduations and college graduations and wonderful night Friday night with weather for Silver Lake, and then others really were rained out for the weekend. But it was a great weekend for all. Congratulations to all the 2023 graduates.
Now, you didn't have any kids walk yet, right?
Not yet. I my next to go, she's a junior, she'll be a senior next year, and then my youngest will be a junior next year.
Wow.
I know, the last two to fly the coop.
How's it feel where they're kind of right there on the cusp?
It feels like I'm old, to be honest. It's exciting. You know, I only have one daughter, and as you know, she's a competitive athlete. She was looking to go D1 but had an injury, wants to go into medicine. So it's kind of exciting. It's a new field. My other sons are engineers, and I don't know what Jack wants to do. So it's you know, it's a new profession to research, and I'm looking forward to it. She's actually attending a camp at Johns Hopkins this summer in June, beginning of June till mid-July. A medical camp to get a little taste, make sure that's the avenue she wants to go to.
I believe you were recently at a luncheon.
I recently was.
Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce Empowering Women Luncheon.
Yes.
What was that like?
It's one of the best events each year. I look forward to it each year. They highlight some local women that are entrepreneurs that do great things, and they're interviewed by the host, and this year it was Michelle Brady. She was last year as well. Mm-hmm. She's the director of the Center of Active Living in Plymouth. She's an amazing,
you're going to say Council on Aging, right?
I almost did. Very inspiring woman on her own, and she interviews, there were five women this year, and it was at the East Bay down at the Pine Hills, which first time I had been there. Beautiful, beautiful venue. And you're going to bring up the flash mob, right?
Yeah, I heard something about a flash mob. You were part of...
I was part of a flash mob. It was my first foray, I guess you would say, into a flash mob. I've never done one before. I've always wanted to. I was asked last minute, but by Amy Naples, who doesn't know Amy Naples, the executive director of the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, who asked me to do crazy things, Dancing with the Stars I've done with her. What else have I done with her? Karaoke, just amazing things. You can't say no to Amy.
Supporting Plymouth businesses.
Supporting Plymouth businesses. We'll do anything I can for Plymouth businesses. So I was asked to join a flash mob with some other wonderful women, Sandra Smith from Remax, Michelle Copang from Remax. Oh my gosh, there was a lot of us, and there were some women from the Fred Astaire dance studio as well. So I'm sure people were shocked at first, saying, why are these crazy women getting up and clapping and walking forward? But I think it went over well.
Did you guys rehearse, or was just...
We did rehearse, yep. We rehearsed a few times.
Like five or six minutes to do this, and then...
We had like 3 days. I knew 3 days before we were going to do it.
See, I thought it was kind of like more or less on the spot.
Why, did it look like it was more or less on the spot?
No.
Is that what you heard?
I thought we looked very
professional.
I heard you, it went well, but from what you're telling me, to the accounts that you're telling me, it sounds like you like just found out that day. That's what I envisioned.
3 days. I thought 3 days was pretty close. But it was great. It was great. It was fun. Great fun. It was a great event. Very inspiring women. Learned a lot. And it was fabulous as well.
Okay. Let's talk about what's the latest as far as anything up on the Hill. You know, the House of Representatives, your job is done as far as the fiscal 24 budget. Now it's waiting for the Senate and for...
We're waiting for conference committee.
Conference committee.
We're waiting. It's in conference committee, and they'll hash it out, and then it will go to the governor's desk. So
seems like it's a bit early. It seems like
That sounds really quick, but as we know, nothing is
quick.
At the State House works quickly. So... some great earmarks I was able to get into the budget for my district, which is really exciting. One of them is for a veterans memorial in Kingston. So there's a committee that's been working on that for a long time. So that's, you know, dear to my heart. I'm a mother of a veteran and a daughter of a veteran. So I'm excited for that project to be able to be completed and started and completed. But, you know, hearings have started. Tomorrow I have the second hearing for healthcare finance, which is really exciting.
You're VC for that, right?
I am the vice chair of healthcare finance this year, which is, you know, tomorrow we're going to be focusing on pharmaceutical access, cost, and transparency. And that is virtual as well as in person. So the committee will be there in person. People can come in and testify in person, but they do have that virtual option where they can Zoom in. You can always send in written testimony, which is really important. It opened up the access for everybody to be able to testify at a hearing. If you're from Western Mass, to get, or any people that work, or, you know, any kind of thing to get into the State House is kind of a tough thing for some people. So now they have the option of virtual. But you always have written testimony option, too.
Now that COVID has been, the emergency has been lifted.
Yes.
Still allowed to use that the State House is still using the virtual mechanism to be able to kind of get input from constituents all over the Commonwealth?
Yes, which is one of the great things that came out of the pandemic. You know, if there's anything, it's that it's more accessibility for people. Actually, we no longer vote virtually or by telephone.
Right.
We all have to be there, which is very important, I think. But I forgot how busy the State House is and how many great things happen and how many people come to you knocking at your door and want to talk to you. And it's been fabulous just to see the life back at the State House.
Now, do you have new offices?
I did move my office, so I am now in 146. Great office. Great office, yeah. Just finally all
moved in. I heard from one of your colleagues, one of your counterparts, who said that you have nice eggs and that you know, folks like to come and hang out
in my office.
Your office.
Yes,
yeah.
I have a couch and four chairs, so it's a great place to congregate. Yeah, it is a great place.
What is that like to where when you first were elected to where you are now? When you look at it in retrospect, what has it been like?
It has been, when you first go in, you really don't know what to expect and you're learning. And I'm still learning. Don't get me wrong. I'm still learning. But you're kind of like watching and seeing who's who and what's what and kind of getting a lay of the ground there, the lay of the land. And this session, I feel there's a lot more confidence. You know, I was able to chair one of the Ways and Means hearings, which was such a great opportunity for me, and just a lot more confidence and finding that solution no matter what, leaving no rock unturned. Even when someone says no, there's another avenue to go, and I'm very confident in finding that other avenue, which is great, and a great staff. I have an addition. Now, Chris Jean has been with me 4 years today. That flew. So he's now the chief of staff, and I have Stephanie Landry, who does constituent services, and she's amazing. She's been at the State House over 30 years. She knows where I said. She knows where all the bones are buried. She knows everything. So I'm very fortunate. I have a great office. I have great interns. I have 8 new young women, college. Some have come back from last year, but they're all really hungry to learn and full of energy and questions, and it's a great place to be right now.
Are you still dealing and tackling any post-COVID issues, or has a lot of that been resolved since, and it's kind of life has returned back to normal for the State House and the 12th Plymouth District?
For the State House, it's turned back to normal, I would say. But, you know, our new normal, you know, the State House is, it's open. It's, you know, we're wide open, and that's back to normal. But as, you know, constituent issues, I think some are left over from the pandemic. You know, some have pivoted with their occupation or their home situation. So there's still issues, but there's always new issues coming up as well. New challenges for people.
When we just heard about the vote federally to raise the debt ceiling, how does that affect state business? Is that something that you and your colleagues keep an eye on and say, this could be troubling if, you know, our folks down in Washington don't make the right decisions?
The right decisions. We're in contact with our federal delegation. So I have Markey and Ed Markey and Congressman Keating that we're always in contact with it, that, and they keep us abreast of the situation. But we are, our focus is mainly on the state, you know, our constituents in the state. But thank God we have a great federal delegation that keeps us abreast of everything that's happening.
What else do you want to talk about? What else is going on in the district or that you've been working on?
Oh, I have been working on, so like I said, we're starting hearings. So I was able to testify a couple times last week. One was with the Judiciary Committee, and it's a bill that I filed to add stabbing under the definition of attempted murder. Pretty heavy stuff. It sounds simple, and it sounds like common sense, and a lot, when I bring it up to people, they're bewildered. Why isn't stabbing part considered attempted murder? And that was filed from one of my constituents who's become my friend, who was a domestic violence victim who was stabbed multiple times and died six times on the table.
Goodness.
And when her assailant was charged, he wasn't charged with attempted murder. So his sentence wasn't as... I mean, he went to murder her. I mean, that was his intent. His intent was to kill her. But his sentence wasn't as severe as it would be if he was charged with attempted murder.
Interesting.
So we discussed it. So I filed that bill with her in mind, and we both testified at that hearing. It was very emotional. She told her story. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. But I have to tell you, this is one of the strongest women I've ever met. She wants to make a difference, and she really is. She's been telling her story now. I think it's been 5 years, and we are being followed by Channel 5. She's been interviewed by Karen Anderson a few times. So it's very important to me. It's just something that's simple, but I've been working a lot with domestic violence victims. That's been very empowering to me, and empowering to them as well. They're empowered when they get to speak up. So that's been great for me. Another hearing that I had was with the economic development, which I'm on. But it was for a bill that I filed last year that passed the House but didn't pass the Senate. And this is to allow the VFWs and Legions to have slot machines. So this came after one of the Legions in Plymouth who had slot machines, legally had slot machines, and then they were taken away. And now we have sports betting. We have all these things. And these slot machines really are to fund the Legions. You know, they're losing membership. Younger people aren't joining the Legions like they used to. So the Legions aren't able to sponsor baseball. Legion baseball is a huge thing. Well, they don't even have the money to sponsor that. They used to use this money for scholarships and things for the community. So I'm hoping that will pass again the House this year. And hopefully the Senate will see how great this is for our Legions and our VFWs, and it's an avenue for them to raise funds for the community. So that was last week as well. We have some bills coming up. The voter safety bill will come up. We'll testify on that. Lots of hearings, lots of testimony coming up.
Again, if you're just tuning in, you are tuned in to Monday Night Talk. We're chatting with State Representative Kathy Lanatra, a little bit of a State House report, getting caught up with her, as we try to do with a lot of our local representation. We have a fine group of folks here on the South Shore.
We do. We have a great
who take
delegation.
Turns coming in and talking, whether it's on this radio program or on the radio station itself, to kind of keep folks up to speed as to some of the things that they are working on. Digressing back to the dangerousness bill and adding stabbing to it, what kind of support are you seeing? And, you know, why was this something that wasn't initially added to the initial law that passed?
Yeah. I don't know. That was well before my time. I think when I bring up the bill, even to my friends that are attorneys, are shocked that it's not included. We had a lot of positive feedback when we spoke in front of the committee. And then my colleague, who you know, Jelly, is she peanut butter or jelly? I can't remember.
We haven't decided,
but Allison Sullivan is also on judiciary, and she asked a few poignant questions and is a supporter of this bill as well. So, you know, it sounds like common sense, and sometimes when it sounds like common sense, it could be one little word that needs to be changed. Nothing's as easy as it seems. Nothing is as easy as it seems. But we'll forge ahead, and we'll see how the committee votes, whether to move it forward or what they want to do with it.
What else do you have in the works? What else do you want to make sure we talk about while we have you here on air?
I would love to talk about border safety. Can we talk about border safety for a moment?
It's the season. Well,
tis the season.
Once it warms up a little bit, you know, probably.
Well, we did have some warm days, and I did see a lot of boats on trailers.
We had 90 degrees last Friday, and yes. It disappeared.
This disappeared. We're back to November. November can leave now. I feel like it's November again. But I do bring this up every season, I feel like, Kevin, with you. And it's really important. You know, I'll go through. We take driver's ed. We take a test to get our license for a car, and a car has brakes. Well, you can have some extra cash floating around to decide you want to be on the water and be a captain of your own boat and bring that boat to the water and not have 1 ounce of training and bring it out. You know, drinking and driving a boat is very dangerous too, but also knowing like where the rocks are, like a depth finder, red right return. There's so many issues. Checking the weather, you know, types of things that if we just had a little boat safety class, which is very inexpensive, and you can start taking that when you're 13, because all my children took it, just to have some training to get out there on that boat. I think it's very important. It was, it's going to be called the David Hansen Act when it passes. Hopefully it'll pass this session. After a young gentleman who was a call firefighter in Kingston and went out with his friend in a boat with no training, and fortunately the boat capsized and David lost his life. And his mother passed of cancer. And, you know, that makes me even more motivated to get this for his family, to have this pass for his family. But not only that, there's so many deaths that happen, you know, through the summer, whether it's on a lake or a pond or in the ocean. And, you know, all it needs is a little training. We just need a little training. We're not taking anything away from, and you know, the motto, I think I've said this in my family all the time, is safety first has always been our family motto. So let's just put a little safety first here.
But would the training entail fees? Because that's one thing people, if they got to dig into their wall, like.
I know. No, I understand that. I understand that. And, you know, you can pay for the class, but they also offer that class free. Yeah, they offer it now. The class has been offered for a very long time. And a lot of times it's offered free. A lot of times you pay a nominal fee. There will be a little fee for your certificate, but it'll be nominal. You know, I think it's well worth it.
Now, is this the first time that you have filed this?
No, this has been filed several times. It was filed by my predecessor, Tom Coulter, as well. Hmm. I think that it's gone through many changes because it would be monitored under the jurisdiction, I should say, of the environmental police. And, you know, you get into, I want to say politics there, but you get into, like, who's going to be in charge of this and who's going to be in charge of that, and you kind of get in the weeds with it.
Yep.
So this session, I just made it, took all that stuff out. You know, everybody had their input, and there was too much input, too many cooks in the kitchen, as to say, right? And I think it got muddied up with a little bit of I don't know. It just got muddied up. I just thought it was like, let's get this passed. Let's strip this down, get this passed, and work on the particulars after it's passed.
Okay. But I have to ask another question. Let's go recreational representative.
Recreational.
Yeah. So can tell folks about your new passion.
Oh, so many know that I took up golf 3 years ago and I became obsessed. I do have a golf tournament coming up. Can I say that? Okay. So I have a golf tournament. My second annual golf tournament will be on July 14th at Squirrel Run. That's where I golf. I golf at Squirrel Run in Village Links because they're small courses and I'm done in 2 hours and 10 minutes. I have been golfing with the same people for 3 years. They're very patient with me and I adore it. But now my friend from the chamber has signed me up for a pickleball tournament. And I have taken two lessons. I called my friend who has now become a pickleball instructor, and he came up from the Cape, and my friend Amy and I took a lesson, and I think we're both hooked. And then we took a second lesson from her parents, who have been playing pickleball for years.
Oh yeah.
And we thought we were going to go easy on them.
They were off of blood, huh?
They wiped the court with us. Wiped the court with us. But it's interesting, the terms, like, we know we don't volley in the kitchen. Yeah, there's a lot of terms, there's a lot of rules, but I think this could be a new thing. I think I could do this with my husband because we're partners.
Ooh.
We don't golf well together because we're competitive, but if we're partners, maybe that will change the whole dynamic and we'll be able to do it.
We'll have to get updates.
Stay tuned on that.
Stay tuned for that. You going to stick around?
I'm going to stick around.
All right, she's going to put on the co-host hat. We're going to step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Please join us for Brockton Celebrates Summer Solstice on Wednesday, June 21 from 3 to 8 p.m. There will be refreshments, children's activities, and vendors. We'll have performances by John Belutis, Mariah Rose, Kiana Marie Trinidad, and Bag Full of Blues. Join us as we celebrate the longest day of the year on a beautiful summer afternoon at City Hall Plaza, 45 School Street in Brockton. Brockton Celebrates Summer Solstice, Wednesday, June 21, 3 to 8 p.m. See you there. The West Bridgewater Gazebo Concert Series will be held on Tuesdays this summer, beginning on June 27th. Each Tuesday will feature a different performer and food truck. Come for dinner, stay for the entertainment, bring a lawn chair or a blanket. There will be 5 concerts at the Town Gazebo and 3 children's fun nights at Friendship Park. Most events begin at 6 p.m. However, times may vary slightly depending on the performer and location. Keep Tuesdays on your calendar for the West Bridgewater Summer Concerts and Activities.
AM radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. And it's also a vital service that provides important emergency information when your community needs it most. Tell Congress you need AM radio to stay in your car. Because when cell phones and the internet are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress we need AM radio in cars.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Pilgrim Festival Singers presents American Voices. Celebrate our American heritage with artistic directors William B. Richter and Elizabeth Chapman Riley on Saturday, June 24th at 7:30 p.m. and on Sunday, June 25th at 4 p.m. at the St. Bonaventure Parish located at 803 State Road in Plymouth. Enjoy a delightful concert of music that showcases folk songs, spirituals, shape note hymns, and songs from two American musicals, Ragtime and Guys and Dolls. Get your tickets now at pilgrimfestivalchorus.org. We hope to see you there.
Don't miss the Just Steph Show every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. for fun guests and tips on living your best life every day. I'm bringing sexy back to Monday nights.
Tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we're back. A little in-between commercial conversations going on here. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk, and you hear this little chaos going on as we have Richard Rosen is in the house. Richard was supposed to be part of the whole co-host team. But I kind of made a mistake. I haven't done a new opening. It's kind of the bane of his, whenever we do, he's like, first thing he goes, I thought you were going to do a new opening. Where's the opening?
I do tend to cause chaos sometimes.
You do. But You've also brought somebody who was world-renowned.
World-famous.
Yep.
And I just
thought world-renowned was the same thing.
No? I did too, but I guess not.
I don't know.
Okay, I look that up.
I was a strong C student, okay. So I don't know. What, you know. Even great. Though we did win some awards for our B show, I'm still strong C student.
But speaking of which, so we have Mr. McLaughlin's here. He's going to be joining us in a few moments. We're going to talk a little bit about pigeon racing. But before we get into talking about pigeons, we always want a update from one of our favorite restaurants here on the South Shore. Favorite two restaurants, that is.
Yes, yes.
That is the patio at McGuigan's and McGuigan's Pub.
Correct.
How are things at both restaurants?
Things are really, really good. the fact that we had some nice weather for a change.
We opened all those windows.
It was, we've had a couple of really, really good weeks with the weather. I mean, it's the time of the year where people just really want to get out. So, before I forget, breaking news, we just announced that the 13th annual McGuigan's Pub 5K is going to be September 24th.
Ooh.
Which is really hard to believe. We've raised over, out of that little pub in Whitman Center, $65,000 that went to all local groups and organizations.
Oh, that's
different
wonderful.
With probably half of it has gone to the Whitman Food Pantry. And we have a new menu coming out at the end of the week in the patio. New menu.
Do I have to wait until like the end of the week?
Yeah.
Yeah, can you give us like a little sneak peek?
I'm not lifting the curtain. I will tell you that there is a new, you're not going to believe this, there is a new entree called Chicken Danielle.
Oh.
No, is it Danielle?
This could be like, Danielle. Like the Tachi or something like that.
Yeah, it's Chicken Danielle. So we do have a brand new menu, and I know you always like to know about the new things.
We have
the lobster rolls are back.
Of course they are.
Both places.
Of course they are. It's June.
Fried clams are back in the pub. And live entertainment, Friday and Saturday nights, both places.
Singo. You don't Singo anymore?
Yeah, Wednesday nights. Wednesday nights, Singo with Half Price PC. You can't get in the place.
Wow.
It's been really good. And we're doing Taco Trivia Tuesday.
Ooh.
And the tacos are very inexpensive and the trivia is good. And we're busy. So we know about the restaurants, and I could sit here and talk about them.
But again, it's, you know what? If I don't have the godfather of Whitman, Massachusetts, on to talk a little bit about those two restaurants.
By the way,
there are people who go, how do you have Richard Rosen on and not talk about his two restaurants?
So, by the way, I got a call this afternoon from Channel 25 is doing a zip trip to Whitman.
Well, that's right.
I'm meeting with them next week. They want to, you know, they want me.
Do they want the lobster roll?
I was going to say, they want the lobster roll.
Or the Toll House cookie pizza.
Oh.
Ooh. I didn't even think of telling her, but I'm actually meeting her at the Toll House. But listen,
you need to consult with me before you talk to these people.
I think it's Wednesday I'm meeting them. But so let me tell you how I found out about pigeon racing. So Frank's brother Dan is one of our reps, and I've known him for many, many years. Had no idea. And one day he was there. We hadn't opened yet, and a delivery came, and he goes, hey, do you have any boxes? He always asks me about the bees. So we were talking about the bees, and I don't know how. I said, yeah, I got some boxes. He goes, yeah, these would be good to transport the pigeons. And I'm like,
you're like, what?
The what? So he told me a little bit about his brother, and it was some time ago, and then I talked to you about it, and I talked to Dan about it. And so now we have a world-renowned pigeon racer, professional pigeon racer,
what?
Frank McLaughlin. And I'm just going to turn it over to you to ask him. Let me just, before, I was out in the hallway with
him. Yeah, I can hear you guys talking it up.
I learned more about pigeon racing in the last 5 minutes in the hall than I ever thought I knew in my life. And it is fascinating. Fascinating.
Now, did this start out with sending messages and you want to see how fast? I mean, how did pigeon racing begin? Do you have any idea of its origin?
Well, it originated in Belgium. Like probably in the late 1800s, and at the time they were using like manual clocks. The pigeons only fly one direction, so they'll actually truck them out. We truck them to a liberation point. We all have exact GPS measurements, and the birds wear a computer chip, so they're scanned in before They leave. When they fly home, they scan themselves in as they enter the pigeon lofts. And it's not whose bird got home first. It's whose bird averages the fastest speed in yards per minute. So years ago, they used to wear these little, you know, marker bands, and the guys would have to take them and put them in a manual clock, and they might have shipped them by train. But now, they truck them. And I belong to a club in Norwood, the Braintree Norwood Club. And, it's pretty popular in the U.S., but not as popular as some of the sports.
So you say you truck them, but you also fly these birds all over the world. Tell us about some of those international races we were talking about.
Right, maybe some famous people you've crossed paths with.
Yeah, we can do that. Well, there's right now what's fueling the pigeon sport is a lot of people are just keeping pigeons for breeding. They'll buy some good bloodlines and genetics, and then they'll raise the babies, and then they'll send their baby to like this massive race in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, where you pay an entry fee, all the birds are trained under identical conditions, and then there's big prize money. There's big races in South Africa, Zimbabwe, Pattaya, Thailand. We enter all those races. I work for a couple of them promoting their races. And in the U.S., there's huge races in the U.S. In Indiana, the biggest race in America is the Hoosier Million Dollar Race. And you'll pay an entry fee, you'll send your baby, and there'll be like $1.6 million in prize money for the race.
Whoever would have thunk it, huh?
No.
Do you have a question? Do you have a question?
I'm still in amazement. I will have a question in a moment.
Okay. Forbes, so how did you get involved? What was the one day that you crossed the path of somebody going, you raise pigeons? And then you really got hooked?
Well, it's funny. I mean, when I was a little kid, probably 5 or 6, we kept chickens in Quincy. My father, we'd go to farms around Middleborough and we'd see a hen or something, and my father would buy the chicken for me. One day we went to a farm, and the person had a couple of white fantail pigeons. They're just like an all-white fancy breed, big, wide, fan, white tail, and they kind of, walk with a little bit of a stagger and a... Well, I liked
a drunk pigeon.
So my father bought me the pair of birds, and they ended up reproducing in my chicken coop. And I was little, 7 or 8 years old, and they kept for a couple years. They were breeding way up above where I could reach. So I had like maybe 15 of them. So one day I decided I have too many of these pigeons, so I let them out. I let some out. And they went from house to house in Quincy, and they bounced all around. They came back. They landed in the backyard. I opened the door to the chicken coop, and they walked in. And I was like, I
couldn't
believe it.
This is amazing.
My father came home. I said, Dad, you won't believe what happened. And he said, I know a guy with homing pigeons. You might like those. So there was a person in Quincy, Fred Padula, who actually, he was a racer, but I didn't know at the time. We went to visit, and I saw the clock and the nest boxes and all these fancy racing pigeons. And we gave the chickens away. In came the racing pigeons, and I started at 10 years old. So 51 years ago, I've been racing pigeons 51 years.
So how do you know if you have, like, a world champion pigeon, is there some kind of training? Do you give them special feed?
Yeah, all of that. I mean, we're like, when you race pigeons, you're the coach, you're the dietitian, you're the trainer, you're the manager. You do everything, just like a little athlete. They're all individuals, and we'll manage the team. My brother helps me a lot, my brother Dan, and we'll manage the team for specific races. There's certain training, feeding. Yeah, it's an art. It's really an art form to be successful with it.
So it sounds like the Westminster, when you see dog shows and the different breeds of dogs, it sounds like...
Similar. I mean, racing pigeons are their own breed. They're not like what you see in the street. It's kind of like a real good racing pigeon. It's like comparing a donkey to a thoroughbred racehorse. The donkey would be like the wild bird, and the thoroughbred would be like the racing pigeon. You can see there's a big, big difference in the animal. I mean, they're all similar, but there's a big difference.
How much does it cost to buy a racing... So if I said, Frank, I want to buy a racing pigeon and get into this. How much would one spend?
Well, we want to encourage, with the bees, we want to encourage people to get into the sport. So I usually will give, people starting out really good stock young pigeons to get them started in the sport. But, I mean, they sell anywhere from a couple hundred dollars to hundreds of thousands of dollars for a top racing pigeon, even over $1 million. Some have sold over $1 million, if you can believe it.
I was going to say, we talked about that in the hall, that you had you know someone that had a pigeon that was over $1 million.
Yeah, I work for the biggest pigeon auction site in the world. It's out of Belgium, and it's called, you know, Pigeon Paradise or PIPA, and they sell pigeons anywhere from 2,000 and 3,000 up to hundreds of thousands every week. But they're very super successful pigeons. They're the biggest winners and in big competitions. Are they breeders of big winners? So yeah, bloodlines, genetics, just like the racehorses.
What is the lifespan of a pigeon?
Ooh, good question.
Well, we race them for about, they can race till about 5 years old. You know, one of my best hens this season is 5, another one is 4. They race about 5. They'll breed about 10, 12 years is their breeding, and they live about 15 years.
So what is, are they hitting their peak at around 3 or 4 years?
2 or 3.
Oh.
Yeah, about, they're mature at 2. I would say that 2 to 3 years old is, that's their peak for performance. You know, that's the age. I really like to race them if possible.
And do you put some of these, I'm going to use a horse analogy here, but do you put some of these pigeons after the five-year mark, you put them out the stud?
Usually before that, if there's, no, it's true. If they're super successful, you take your best ones and you use them for breeding. I mean, the birds that have performed over the race course and have big records, they have value, and you know their genetics, you know they're good, you're not guessing. Or some, you know, a lot of times you're guessing when you're trying to breed from a pigeon, but a bird that's been very successful, your chances of breeding good babies from that bird is increased.
How far in length of are these races?
Well, in my area, we start in, first race is Albany, New York. So it's like maybe 155 miles from Albany to the Pigeon Lofts. And it varies because we live from Worcester to the North Shore to Cape Cod. So some of the people might only race 112 miles. Others might race 165. But it's, again, it's figured in yards per minute over the race course. And we've started 150 miles, and we'll have a 600-mile race in June. The end of June will be our last race of the season. And the birds will fly that anywhere from 12 to 14 hours. They'll fly 600 and to my pigeon loft, 608 air miles in 12 to 14 hours. They cover some ground.
So you mentioned it's seasonal. Is there a season that you
Yes, race? Right now we're racing the adult birds. It's like an all-age bird. You can race any age bird in the springtime. We start the middle of April through the end of June. And in the fall, it's only eligible to the birds born that year. So we're breeding our babies in the springtime to race in the fall races. So the year of the birth pigeons race, like 2023 babies will race this fall.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we have a Frank McLaughlin, world champion pigeon racer, get involved telling us how lucrative this, well, pretty much lucrative when it comes to these animals. Have you cross paths with anybody notable that we would know, whether it's in entertainment or sports, that are fans of pigeon racing?
There's definitely some big names. I went to an event in Vegas, and Mike Tyson attended, and I introduced myself. He knew me. I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know him at the time, but yeah. When he heard the name, I was working with a big race in South Africa. It was called the South African Million Dollar Race. So I said, hey, Mike, I'm Frank McLaughlin. He goes, oh, you're Mr. Million Dollar. You're Mr. Million Dollar. He knew me because of the race I was working with. So, yeah, it was interesting. The Queen Elizabeth keeps, I mean, she just passed, but she raced and kept a team of pigeons for years. She entered them in all the big one-loft races that I entered throughout the world also. She hasn't had much success, but she was still entering pigeons for years.
Is this something that has kind of been passed on to King Charles or any other of the royal family?
Yeah,
or
I mean, just they probably still have the royal family pigeons, but I'm not sure. I'll see maybe next year if there's some entries from the royal family. But she had a team. She had a loft manager and the Queen's pigeons, and they were competing against us in different races around the world.
So is the loft at your home, or do you have it off-site where they're kept?
Yeah, the lofts, people keep the lofts at their home. It's like a building. We call it a, you know, pigeon coop. It's more or less a pigeon loft. That's the name for a pigeon building, a pigeon loft. So, yeah, they live in buildings. And
must have security. I mean,
yeah, how do you even predators these days? Whether it's, you know, your
or a
local cat or
pigeon napper. I mean, they're worth some money.
There is theft around the world. I mean, some of these famous pigeon lofts have been broken into, and thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars of pigeons have been stolen. But, you know, we've been pretty lucky. We have, you know, the guard dogs, and it's pretty secluded. You'd have to pass through a lot of briars and swamp to get to the pigeon lofts, so...
We're not going to disclose where it is, by the way.
Yeah. No. But it's here on the South Shore, correct?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of us on the South Shore that race pigeons.
So is there like a pigeon racing club?
Yes. It's called...
Give them a shout out if you want.
The Braintree Norwood Club. And it's a club out of Norwood. I belonged to the Plymouth Racing Pigeon Club forever, but that kind of disbanded.
Right in the 12th Plymouth District?
Right in the 12th Plymouth District.
Right down by Plymouth Harbor. We raced there for a million years. And there's local clubs, and we race in a combine. It's called the Southern New England Combine, where they combine. First, you race in your club. You get your results from your club, and then they combine the results of all the clubs. There's four clubs, and then you see who won overall. And then there's national results too. I belong to the American Racing Pigeon Union and the International Federation of Racing Pigeon Fanciers, and they also compile results nationally. So, and there's a convention going on this fall. My club is running a convention where people send their babies in from all over the country, and we're handling them for other people.
Wow.
So there'll be a convention and then a big race, but we're training the babies for others. So there'll be like 40 or 50 of us that are handling babies for this convention, and there'll be winners and all that sort of fun stuff.
Richard, I feel as though he has absorbed more information and is even more amazed.
It's amazing. It's just like, how do you train a pigeon?
Well, a lot of it's instinct.
Very carefully, Richard.
Yeah, okay.
Very carefully.
We let them out usually when they're babies, maybe, you know, 6 weeks old. We'll put them in, we call it a settling cage, where they're on a... They get to go out and look around. They can't fly away, but they get to see the backyard, and they get to see their loft, and then they go in and out. We have like a one-way door where they can walk in, but they can't walk back out. So they learn this process. And then once they have a good understanding of this is my home and this is where I live, we let them out, and then they start flying. And they'll fly in a flock. They'll circle in a group. And once they're flying relatively strong, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, we'll take them a half a mile away and let them go, and they'll come home, and we'll take them a mile, 5 miles, 10 miles, 20, 30, out to about 60, 70 miles, liberate them, drive them out by car, liberate them, they fly home, and then they can pretty much home from anywhere. You build up this...
Go ahead.
Do they ever beat you home?
All the time, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah, no, it's
insane.
It's fascinating.
It's difficult to beat them home.
But what about other natural predators?
Well,
like, we're talking like hawks.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
I would say the hawks and the falcons have been the biggest obstacles that we've dealt with When I was a kid, it wasn't an issue. The DDT kind of wiped out the hawks and the birds of prey. But the last 15 years, it's falcons are bad, Cooper's hawks, Gosh hawks, stuff like that. It makes it very difficult. So we're always trying to make sure that the birds are safe.
How would you know if a bird was somehow captured by a bird of prey?
Well, if we...
You said this Jeep is used. You got some kind of a device on them, right?
Yeah, but it's not a tracking. Some birds, you can put a GPS tracking device on them, but it's a little heavy, and, you know, I haven't messed with that
yet.
Chips?
Can you do like a chip?
They do wear a computer chip, but they have to come home for them to be scanned in. But no, we don't... If we lose a bird or if it disappears, many times, yeah, it might have been a bird of prey, and then we get them... They come home from a race or from training, and you can see where they got away from bird of prey, where they might be sliced by a talon or missing a tail. So the birds of prey are really tough on us right now.
We got 2 minutes left in the segment. Frank McLaughlin, you've been a great guest and a great find, another great find by Richard Rosen. Want to thank you for bringing Frank in to have the conversation, because he goes, you got to learn more about this. This is, like, fantastic. Like, this...
It's pretty fascinating.
It's pretty fascinating. If folks wanted to get involved, would you have information you'd want to give out?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the best place to get started would be pigeon.org. Pigeon.org. And it's the link to the American Racing Pigeon Union, and they have packets of information. And... you know, local clubs or wherever you live, they can, you know, guide you in the direction. And of course, you know, people can contact me. It's Frank McLaughlin. If you Google me, I'll come up all over the place with Frank McLaughlin Racing Pigeons. I have a YouTube channel that I'm having fun with that I just started recently, and it's been good.
Very nice. Might have to do a show. What do you think about?
Oh, I think we have a show in the future.
Okay, definitely. Frank, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and Richard, I want to thank you for the lead. What a great guest.
It's quite one last thing before we go.
Please do.
Have you announced that you are now a beekeeper?
I think I did.
We did not too long ago. We did discuss bees at one point.
We did discuss bees at one point, yes. So far, so good. I still see bees, you know, coming in and out and still feeding them sugar water.
I'm very proud of you for finally putting down the camera and and raising some bees.
Have you been stung yet?
Oh, always.
Always?
Always.
Ooh.
Yeah. You should be careful. Yep. We'll talk more.
Okay.
It might be time for racing pigeons.
It might be.
New hobby.
That's it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Gone in a flash. But there's more straight ahead. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. We are back here on Monday Night Talk. Coming up later this hour, Michelle McGrath from McGrath PR. Talk about all the great fun summer things that are happening, whether it's at the James Library or Company Theater or in Plymouth, you name it. But right now, we can talk about your local council on aging centers. Joining us, now I don't know if we have Julie. Yeah, Julie.
I'm here.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So Julie Burke is, she's in Rockland as the director, council on aging director. And then we have Tammy Murray. And she is like a more prestige. You're like community director of blah, blah, blah. You also do elder affairs. Lots of things.
Community
services. And then Gretchen Emmets. And she is the COA director in Pembroke. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Don't forget, pull that close to you.
Thank you.
Who wants to go first? Just to kind of tell us a little bit about your centers and how they're doing at this stage of the year.
I think we should have Julie go first.
Sure.
Julie, so tell us a little bit about what is going on in Rockland in the Council on Aging. And don't be shy because Michael O'Loughlin is here and he's listening.
Hey, Mike.
No pressure, Julie.
So let me first just say thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be able to share a few minutes, about what's going on in Rockland. I will also briefly share that I just started back in November, so just about 6 months ago.
Nice.
A lot of our programs have been consistent throughout the years. Next month will be 9 years that our center is opened. And we offer everything from, like the other two, exercise classes, educational programming, trips. We go on lots of trips. You name it, we have it. We're really busy. We serve hot, balanced meals every day, Monday through Friday. So that always brings a crowd. And, yeah, feel free to ask me any specific questions, anything you're curious about.
Well, we'll do it in a group setting. You'll each get a chance to kind of chip away at whatever we'll ask. We'll go with Tammy next. Just tell us how everything is in Hanover.
Oh, things have been great. They've been great. It's been very busy. As we all do pretty much the same types of programming, we've shifted a lot towards behavioral health and more of a social work approach at our center, helping people that are in need.
One thing I'd like to stress to whoever listens is come to us before everything goes really bad, because it gives us better opportunity to help out where we can. Hanover has some great programs available, such as we have clinical social workers on staff that do free therapy for residents as well as veterans. That's been a great program for the last year. And we just added pickleball. That's huge.
Kind of like a
thing. but yeah, things have been really good.
Gretchen.
Hi, thanks for having me. So, Pembroke, we've been busy and we've been building. So, we're really excited about that. The new community center that will probably open next March. So, that's something that we really kind of fought hard for, and I think will be great for maybe bringing in that younger senior that a lot of us don't tap into right now. We try. I mean, we have exercise. We're doing Spanish class over the summer in the evenings. We're also doing a music series once a month in the evenings, on Monday evenings during the summer. So we try everything we possibly can with the limited space that we have now.
Mike, I'm hogging the microphone here. You want to throw the next question at these ladies?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I ask anytime I interview somebody. So I think Julie's already actually answered this question for me, but you can feel free to answer it as well, Julie. We're seeing people living a lot longer and people retiring a lot younger. And we're seeing, you know, when I was younger, a 55-year-old guy who was wearing orthopedic shoes and light blue pants and maybe golfing as exercise. Now they're still playing men's softball. So what are you guys doing from a town perspective, council perspective, to attract those younger seniors and make the centers viable for all people over 55 years old?
You want me to go first?
You can go first, Tammy.
So we are open 3 nights a week on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. We're open till 8 p.m. For both planned events and hoping that people will come in and want more information. We have had rock bands practice there that brings in a younger crowd. We've had dinners with swing dancing. We have a history series. In fact, we have one coming up in June about the Clark Airport, which is now a neighborhood in Hanover. So we try to bring people in. We used to do a book series that was really great, but it seems that people that are in the 55 age range still have kids that are playing sports. So it's really difficult to get them off the fields and into the center. I also oversee the Parks and Rec Department for the town of Hanover. So we have a softball team. We have food trucks on Tuesday where they have concerts and live entertainment. So it's really kind of spread out for me.
Hanover's rocking.
It is.
Yeah, and I want to say, we're saying that people are living longer. That's true. But we're also finding that there's more younger people with Alzheimer's or mm-hmm. dementia. So that's been one of our focuses too. We have every Tuesday a program for caregivers and the client, because of the fact that they really need the support. And they're people that are my age, mm-hmm. and I just turned 58. Yeah. So, you know, they're younger. So we're finding, even though they're living longer, we're having more issues like that for them. But we do the same that everyone else, that Julie does, that Tammy does. We do the evening hours with the programs and try to bring in people after work. And, you know, it's a lot of people, even in their 70s, are still working, quite honestly.
It's the economy. Yep. There's not much you can do.
Go ahead, Julie. I was just going to add quickly.
Please.
So something I find interesting, too, is a lot of times we'll see those mid-50s maybe coming in with a parent, bringing them to a program or maybe getting help with, you know, Medicare or Medicaid. And then they kind of take a look around and they're like, hey, wait, this is really cool. Can I come here? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And then we kind of get them in that way, too. I'm like, yeah, just come in on your break for a cup of coffee or, you know, take that exercise class or, you know, any other programming we might have. And I feel like lately we've seen a lot of that. And it just opens their eyes up to, oh, yeah, because at 55, we do still feel young, right? So it's kind of that funny stage of life.
Yeah, guilty. I'm like sitting here, Mike saying like, you know, a guy who's like 55 years old and he's got, Mike, I don't have orthopedic shoes, but I am. I'm in that age. But is it the stigmatism? I mean, you think of council on aging, like, oh, that's for people who are like,
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Julie?
I think they're shocked, truly, just like with Gretchen and Tammy's faces, and they walk in and they expect to see exactly what Mike described, and it's completely opposite. You know, there's a game of chess going on, or they're doing Zumba, or, you know, playing on the iPad. So they're like, oh, wait, this is cool, and I can come here, you know?
Is it possibly something that... that could be done to better, I don't say market, but I mean, to kind of change, you know, you think, again, Council on Aging, is there not a way for better marketing for what it is that the centers do? Maybe a change of name or something? I mean, is that something that a lot of...
Rebranding.
Thank you. I couldn't spit it out because, you know, I'm at that age where you forget things. It's right there.
You had it surrounded.
I have a program for that on Tuesdays. So if you want...
I'll be there.
With the new community center, that's one of my goals, is to try and rebrand. So when we go in to the community center, we're more intergenerational and not just, you know, the senior center. It's an active center for learning.
But is that the problem? Is that, again, you said senior center.
Right.
How can your centers rebrand? Has there been any discussion, whether it's here in the South Shore, is there a state level, you know, organization that is kind of a trade organization that could say, hey, this is what we can do, is it grant money to kind of find a way to rebrand?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I know Plymouth changed to the Center for Active Living. Is that what it is? Years back. And I don't think the stigma of the senior center has worn off. Never mind, seniors like to be called older adults now, so you can't have an older adult center. I don't know if there's grant money available, but I do know when I did have somebody in marketing for us, it's how we met, Kevin, we had a whole different crowd, a lot more excitement. But you need that person who's there at least 20 hours
stoke
a week.
Stoke the fire.
To, really get it out there.
And to change it around. I mean, we tried it before at a different location in Kingston, and it was tough to get the older adults to want to change it because they felt that that would be bringing in other people that they didn't want, maybe.
And a lot of seniors, older adults, feel slighted because a lot of the tax money goes to schools or to sports organizations, and they always feel like they're not getting enough money, and in many cases that's true. So when you open it up to younger, like 25-year-olds, it does cause a stir.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't go as far as 25. I'm not sure that, you know, necessarily the 25-year-olds. But to that point, I mean, if you're 55, I think to what's kind of been said is you don't realize that you're a senior.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of pushing that back. You're trying to push that stigmatism off and push that off as long as you can. But there are some that might go there and might be looking to the center as a place of refuge for them. And I think that's some of the trouble where people are running into is how do you market to that younger generation that is also a senior? You know, they're not 85.
Yep. Plus so, retain the folks who are, you know, not as young.
Yeah, I think their biggest draw right now for that age group is pickleball.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. So.
And that's actually run through our rec department in Pembroke. So,
why is it so popular? What is it about whacking that little ball that's like a wiffle ball?
Anybody?
I'm not sure. I watched them play it
as did I
10 years ago at the Kingston Rec Center. And then I went and saw some older adults playing, and I watched a woman roll her ankle and jump right back up and start playing again. And I was like, what is this? Like, sit down. You know, but it's crazy. And there are a lot of younger people playing it now. I have not hit the 55 bracket. I'm just going to say that out loud. But I try to add things that interest people my age. And Julie was right. A lot of times I get the adult children bringing their parent in, and it ends up that we went to school together or something, and then that kind of draws them in. Yeah. But it is definitely challenging.
Yeah, I think both, you know, I'm not sure about Julie, but both Tammy and I have brought in, like, mindfulness and things that just kind of bring you back to yourself to take a breath. We have grief support groups. I have a really active dull men's group.
I think I might have had one of your members, John Brown.
Yeah. Oh,
who
yeah.
is? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call him dull to his face, but he's actually mentioned. No. But we've talked about it. We've had the conversation, and John's like, "Yeah, I'm part of this club," and I'm like, "Okay, then." And that's as far as the conversation went. I want to kind of roll things back for half a second here. Earlier this month, it was announced that COVID is no longer a thing. Are things back to normal in your respective centers? We'll start with you, Gretchen.
So I guess it depends on what normal is. I think that we learned a lot during COVID.
We
had to manage things totally different
ways.
Be
creative.
Yeah, we really did, and think outside the box. So I don't know if we'll ever go back to normal, but I can tell you, like, a month and a half ago, the numbers for COVID were up again, and it was horrible. And even those people had their vaccinations, because we did them, and we know it. People still are coming in if they're not feeling well, and they're still spreading COVID around. So that's always going to be something to do, but we see that our numbers have really increased, and my transportation numbers have really increased. So people are getting out there and, starting to enjoy life again. And we really had to reach out to some folks, because you get told, don't go out for 2 years. They're not going to go out. So it's been kind of a struggle mental health-wise that way.
Julie, how about you? What do you think about in regards to COVID?
I agree. I would say our numbers are higher than ever at this point. Folks are coming back out. But you do still see the occasional, someone coming in with a little cough. We always have masks on the desk just in case they want them. We still have the free COVID test if anybody wants them. But like you said, they've declared it not really a thing right now. So do you go about it like a cold or a flu? I don't know. But numbers wise, folks are out again. I think they're happy, and things are busier than ever.
Tammy?
So it's opened up a lot of doors. I think there, unfortunately, were a lot of positives that came out of COVID. In Hanover specifically, we have the Mobile Integrated Health Program, where we work very closely with our visiting nurses, the fire department, the police department, and it has uncovered a lot of those unreachable people that I always talk about when I come on the show.
True.
So there's a huge benefit, but it has also brought out a lot of the mental health issues for the people that did stay home and did isolate and now are struggling to get back out into the world or catch up on their bills or whatever they need to do.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, we got a great conversation going on. I actually have coined it the Council on Aging Summer Program Update segment. We'll have to rebrand that somewhere down the road. On the phone, Julie Burke, who is the director in Rockland. We have Tammy Murray, who is wears many hats, but she also leads direction in Hanover. And then Gretchen Emmets, who is in Pembroke. And I want to say a quick shout out to your person I called Friday. Is it Maria?
Marie. Yep.
Marie was fantastic when I called. It's great when I call one of your respective centers and I get, whether I get like Julie I was able to speak with or Marie who did a nice job or anytime that I've called whatever center you were at. We're previously Kingston, now Hanover, and usually there's fantastic folks who are willing to give information and give assistance. Did you have a follow-up question, Mike?
Obviously, we're getting to the point where, Kevin and I were talking earlier. It's been gorgeous weather.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the point where it's really oppressively hot at some point. What do you guys have? What do you offer? What programs does the Senior Center or Council on Aging, what are we calling it now? We'll get to,
Life Beyond 45 Center.
45 now? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm just spitballing here.
What should the demographic know that you guys offer to assist with the harder weather coming up?
Do you want me to start?
You can start, yes. I was actually going to go back to Julie, but you can start.
Sorry, Julie.
No, that's
cool. So Hanover has, I call it a CERT team, but the T in CERT means team, so people get aggravated with that. But they work closely with the fire department. It's a group of volunteers that are ready to open shelters at any point in the time of a heat or a snow emergency. I work closely with Carol Mattis, who is the lead on that group, and we'll open up the center any day of the week, anytime. We transport, we have people that can drive the vans, if a driver isn't available, to get people to the center to get what they need. They're usually provided with food or a charging station or just the AC. But I do remind everyone to drink water, because I think a lot of times we forget.
Gretchen.
So, yeah, same thing as Tammy. We're open for a cooling center all the time. When it's hot out, and we'll put out announcements, we'll have the town put out announcements. When the snow storms hit and you're stuck at home with no power, we'll feed you, we'll keep you warm, we'll put a movie on. The whole center kind of turns into just one big place to go to feel comfortable. And you'll find that there may be another center that's open, say the library for that, but the older adult really likes to come in to where they feel comfortable, so they'll come over to us.
Mm-hmm. Julie?
Yeah, I'm going to jump right on there. Both Tammy and Gretchen, I work closely with the fire chief, and we often, you know, talk throughout the winter, and then with the summer coming up, we're also used as a cooling center or a warming center in the winter. We do have a full kitchen, so we can serve food as well. And then, you know, the folks we do know that are homebound, if we can, you know, get to them at some point throughout the day, we'll absolutely do that as well.
I would ask you each, how essential, how important is either social media or a newsletter to getting the word out about your respective centers? We'll start with Julie.
Yeah, very, very, very important. We actually, in Rockland, when we switched over, when Peggy, my former boss, retired, and I took over, we had an issue with our social media, and I didn't realize how popular it was until we didn't have it anymore. But it is back up and running. But they look for that. They look for the updates, the what's happening, you know, the fun stuff, and you know, if the cooling center, the information and newsletter as well. We send ours out bi-monthly. If for whatever reason they moved or maybe they threw it away, they're right back in to grab a paper copy. They love it. It is online as well, but I think in Rockland we still like our paper copies.
Now, do you have a name for yours?
It's called the Rockland Review, and you can find it on the Town of Rockland website.
Gretchen, I don't know if you know this or not, but radio is not a visual medium, so nobody knows what the hell I'm doing. Gretchen, what's the name of your newsletter, and what do you have one?
Yes, we do. We send it out monthly. It's called The Pioneer, and I also want to say that shows like this and PAC TV really help us out getting the word out.
And Tammy?
Hanover Happenings is our monthly newsletter. And we do use social media a lot. We're going to be adding to Instagram as well to do little short videos for people.
Yay.
And it's really important, and it's great that we have somebody who can share on multiple pages. So once we put something up, it goes on the town site. It goes on all the groups. So it's really important.
Okay. Anything that myself and Mike have not asked you, but you feel is kind of crucial or important that you share with the listeners who might be in your respective towns? Gretchen?
I just think that people should know that it's a free service, the Council on Aging. Someone said, oh, but it's doesn't it cost $5 to join? Our friends group is $5, but that's a separate group. But going to the senior center or wherever is free to come in. Most of our classes, exercise classes, are $5.
Favorite four-letter word, free.
So true.
Tammy?
I'm going to plug the Old Colony Elder Services March Against Elder Abuse that is happening in Plymouth.
Fantastic.
On June 21st. Hanover is going to be sending a team. Gretchen stated that Pembroke's going to be sending a team. Hanover's going to give T-shirts and whatnot and make a real big show of it. we have a lot of people in the walking group that are super excited to go down.
How important is it to recognize that the seniors aren't necessarily taking as good of care as they should be?
It's really important. It's imperative that people understand what abuse really looks like. I think we've had shows on this before mm-hmm. where we've gotten really deep into it. But a lot of times you might think, you know, your neighbor and their kid have just a rough relationship, and meanwhile...
Who knows what's going on behind
right.
closed doors?
Yep.
Julie?
Yeah, I would say to any listeners, you know, come out, take advantage. It is a free program. We offer so many. Again, some of the classes are a few dollars here and there. We have a couple of great presentations coming up. We have on May 30th at 10 a.m. we have a panel of five professionals from lawyers and realtors talking about estate law. That's, you know, again, no charge. We have a Ask a Lawyer, you know, once at the end of the month. Take advantage of that. He's also doing a free presentation on the subject of simple wills on June 20th at 2. Nice. So, again, get on the social media. We're on Facebook now only. Look at the Rockland Review and find out about all these programs and take advantage.
I want to thank the three of you for being so kind with your time. To be here or to be able to be a part of the conversation, we should probably reconvene our little round table here, maybe towards the fall, maybe in August.
Sure, absolutely.
For anything that might be
absolutely.
Happening. Anything happening
yep.
in the fall. Maybe we might add, if we want to add another member of a local council on aging, we can do that as well. We can just kind of keep it a nice circle like this.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you for having us all the time.
It's the idea of the radio
program.
We
really appreciate it. Thank you.
Getting the word out about the community. So
absolutely.
So
thank you very much.
You got it. Julie Burke, Tammy Murray, and Gretchen Emmets, thank you so much for joining. We're going to step aside. We're going to close out strong. Sean McGrath, McGrath PR, coming up in just a moment here on Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Maria's Pizza and Subs in Scituate Harbor would like to take this time to salute our first responders, law enforcement, firefighters, and paramedics. They are there for us year-round. Their commitment and bravery is our first line of defense when tragedy strikes. Let's all take a moment to give them the respect they deserve for their professionalism and valiant efforts. This is from Maria's Pizza and Subs in Scituate Harbor, family-owned and operated since 1965. Proud to support our first responders.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Don't go without a primary care physician. Signature Healthcare is here to support you. There are so many reasons to choose Signature Healthcare for primary and specialty care for you and your family. Signature Healthcare provides trusted referrals to over 17 signature medical specialties and direct access through their medical affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. You'll have access to their retail pharmacy and urgent care centers, providing you full access to your medical records and the ability to request medication refills through their secure patient portal. Most of all, Signature Healthcare helps you stay on top of your health through regular checkups by top quality physicians and staff. Start a relationship with Signature Healthcare today. For an appointment with a Signature Healthcare primary care physician, call 844-SHC-APPT. That's 844-742-2778. Or email APPTS@signature-healthcare.org. Find out more at signature-healthcare.org.
What is AA?
Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of people who have had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, visit AA.org. Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for their news, weather, sports, and a community connection. It's the backbone of the emergency alert system. It's critical that we keep AM radio in cars, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress we need AM radio in cars.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. And we close things out. We close the show out talking with John Paul. John Paul's been on Monday Night Talk previously. He now is a host every Sunday morning, I think at 11 a.m., taking your calls, the car doctor. John, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Well, good evening, and thank you for having me here. I feel a little inadequate, though. I mean, we talked about the marathon. We talked to Dave Wedge. I mean, it's been, I mean, I feel like I got nothing to offer.
You have plenty to offer, because these days when people are it's not easy to, how can I say this, find affordable transportation, maintain your transportation, and what you offer to folks who may not have depth when it comes to their knowledge of local mechanics, problems with their vehicle. Hey, should I buy a car that has 205,000 miles, or should I pass it over? You're the gentleman who's very valuable to our audience here, not only every Sunday, but on Monday Night Talk.
And, you know, what I've always said, and I've been doing this sort of thing either in, you know, AAA's publication or the newspapers or whatever the case is for a long time. And I like to think of myself as a second opinion kind of person. You know, somebody goes out and they go to their garage and, you know, maybe they say they need a cylinder head gasket or a brake job or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. And then they call me and they say, well, based on this, this, and this, what do you think? And I'm going to be the one who gives them that bit of advice, and hopefully, you know, better than, you know, their, you know, favorite uncle or their bartender or whoever they look to for advice. Hopefully I can give them the right advice so they can get their car fixed and fixed properly, or if they're thinking about buying that car that might have a lot of miles on it but might have a lot of life in it, or maybe it's got a lot of miles on it and it doesn't have any life left in it. There's certain cars that you can take a chance with and some that you don't, because those you might find out that, well, that wasn't a good choice. So I try to give people that kind of advice, the same kind of advice that I would give you or, you know, anyone that I've known for a long time. And hopefully they, you know, if they listen to it, that's great. And if they don't want to, my feelings don't get hurt either. It's fine.
And I apologize for not introducing to you. I am surrounded by co-hosts. I have State Representative Kathy Lenatra is one of my co-hosts. And Peter Brown, he is not only my co-host, but he is a proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk. Peter and his family own Tiny and Sons Glass, so he is very well known. He knows his glass when it comes to automotive.
He does, and when I was in the studio one time with you, we chatted about glass.
We did.
And all about Tiny and Sons. Yep, absolutely.
Thank you.
So I open it. That's the purpose of this, something. If we want to talk a little bit about used cars, I don't know
the inventory. How's the inventory going now for used cars?
It's starting to come up a little bit. Prices are starting to come down a little bit. There was a little bit of a blip in car prices. They went up, well, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. But there's certainly a trend over the last 4 or 5 months. We've seen used car prices come down. The other issue is used cars happen when new cars happen.
Correct.
And I was talking to the service manager of a Nissan dealership, and he said he has 15 new Nissans on his lot, where he would normally have 150 new cars on his lot. So because of that, there isn't any new Nissans to buy, so consequently there isn't any used cars to sell. Some of the big manufacturers like GM and Ford have sort of created their own auction scenario where they try to buy every car they can find so they can provide it to their dealers. And that's helped control the prices a little bit. But then you look at companies like Carvana that, you know, you see the commercials and they're like, oh, you have a, 2015 Toyota Camry. You know, take a few pictures of it. We'll come and buy it. And they buy it for... what might be a retail price, and I guess big surprise, Carvana, lost a whole ton of money, in the last quarter because they were, similar to, I guess it was Zillow was buying houses and paying too much for them, and then they found out they couldn't sell them afterwards. So it's kind of the same thing happened with Carvana. Although I will say, if I had the opportunity and I could put that big coin in the Carvana vending machine to watch the car pop out at the bottom, I would give it a try.
When it comes to buying a used vehicle, whether you go through a Carvana, or let's say if you're maybe you're not necessarily looking in your local 25 to 50 mile radius, maybe you might be somebody who, I think I'm going to buy a vehicle from South Carolina because usually the vehicles are a little bit cheaper. We don't have to worry about, we used to say this probably 5 or 10 years ago, but we haven't necessarily seen a lot of terrible winters where there's a lot of salt on the roads, but you would figure that low salt would mean there would be low rust on those vehicles. Does that come at a cost if you buy a vehicle from out of state and you don't know what you're buying?
Well, I think low salt, translates into lower blood pressure. But but as far as... As buying a car well out of state, you still have to be really careful. Somebody I know just bought a 2002 Ford Thunderbird. And, nice Boulevard cruiser kind of car. Unbelievably cheap, $3,000.
Oh, geez.
And they said, and they were buying it from Florida. And they went, wow, it's a Florida car. It's great. They found out it had a salvage title. It was involved in a flood in 2006 in Massachusetts. So here's a car that was flooded out in Massachusetts, declared a total loss, somehow ended up in Florida, and this guy bought it. And realistically, and my answer to him was, for $3,000, put the top down, drive it all you can, and when it finally breaks, throw it away. Call it a disposable toy at that point, because you could get a lot of fun out of that car for $3,000 and enjoy it. And if there's some gremlins along the way, you kind of leave it alone. But you still have to be careful. And there are some states that when the car gets registered, and that's where companies like Carfax and other companies, you have to, look at some of that stuff. If you see a car that's bounced around from state to state, sometimes what happens is the term title washing, because certain states, when they get retitled, all the past information goes away. So the title isn't branded that car was a total loss at some point. So you buy a car that has a Tennessee title or a Vermont title, and it looks good and clean. Well, come to find out, it maybe was involved in a California flood or something.
And that's where the Carfax comes in. And
very valuable. Carfax, yeah, very valuable.
Yeah, so we use that in our business, especially when we're trying to figure out, if a customer has an issue with a water leak or something like that, we'll use that Carfax to check it out. But one of the things that in the used car market now is that when you buy a rental or a past lease car from a rental company, how are those as far as buying, a consumer buying those as to a used car that get traded in?
Well, it's funny. Years ago, and it stopped in 1998, I guess, but I ran the AAA Diagnostic Center in Rockland. So yes, the AAA headquarters, I ran their Diagnostic Center. And back then, when we would get former Hertz rentals and Avis rentals and stuff like that, they were outstanding cars. They were really, really good shape. Because back then, the rental companies only kept the cars for 12 or 15,000 miles. So granted, it may have not had one oil change in 15,000 miles, but realistically, it was in really good shape. And even though it might have had 1,500 drivers in that time, it was a good value. Today, the car rental companies are keeping cars 40, 50, 60,000 miles. And the other part of it is that some of the car rental companies, if the car is a Hertz or Avis or Budget or whatever the car is, and it has low miles, it might have low miles because it was damaged or it had a problem, and that's why it ended up in the auction market. So you still, you know, times have changed. And, you know, today, if you go to try to rent a car, you go to go on vacation, a family vacation, you might spend $500 or $600 for the week to rent a car, where 5 or 6 years ago, you were spending $150 or $200 because the car rental companies have the same issue as regular people when they go to buy 100 or 1,000 cars from the manufacturer. Right. There just isn't enough cars out there right now. So because of the scarcity of cars, prices go up. There was a great story in the news of somebody who went on vacation in Hawaii. They priced out getting a rental car in Hawaii, and I think it was going to be $2,500 for the week. They ended up renting a U-Haul truck for the 7 days they were in Hawaii for like $150.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I mean, kind of odd to show up at a restaurant in a, you know, 14-foot box truck, but, you know, you can take the leftovers home.
Let me ask you this. Buying a used vehicle, you know, there was a time, I think, if you bought one that had, you bought a vehicle that had 50,000, 70,000. Now, if you go on Car Gurus, you can search for those vehicles. High-mileage vehicles, are they still worth the purchase, or is it foolhardy?
No, when things have changed a lot, and I always go back to the time when I was I was 16 or 17 years old, and you know, you hung around with the, you know, car people of the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking under the hood of it was a 1968 Pontiac GTO, and there was a bunch of old guys standing around staring at the hood. And by old guys, I meant they were probably 28 or 30, you know. And but I was like, so what's going on? What's everybody looking at? And they said, well, this car's got 80,000 miles on it, and the engine's never been apart. Now, today, cars can go 200,000 miles and the engine's never been apart. And years ago, not that many years ago, a car with 100,000 miles was at the back of the used car lot.
Right.
Today, a 100,000 mile car is at the front, and they say it's low mileage. Yeah. Because typically, cars can go 175,000 miles. I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to talk to a GM drivetrain engineer, and they were testing an engine and transmission on this weird-looking machine that looked like it should, you know, go out into space. It spun things around, and it was crazy-looking. And I said to him, how much do you test the cars, you know, kind of what's the mileage number you look for? And they said, we test our engines and transmissions to the equivalent of 175,000 miles. We want to know that they're going to go 175,000 miles without any major problems. So today you can kind of look at a car and go, you know, 115,000 miles. Is it going to go another 75,000 miles with no problems? Probably. Is it going to go another 100,000 with no problems? Pretty good chance of that. You know, and part of it has to do with better oil filters. You know, people didn't like unleaded gas when it came out, but the idea of having unleaded gas, you know, keeps spark plugs cleaner, maintenance is less. You know, people are still, you know, when I first started repairing cars a million years ago, you know, people would come in twice a year for a tune-up. You know, they come in the spring and the fall, you know, points, plugs, condenser, distributor cap, wires maybe, air filter. You know, today, you know, some cars you don't put spark plugs in for 105,000 miles. So cars are really a lot better. They last a lot longer. So if you saw a car with 100,000 miles or 120,000 miles and it was reasonably well maintained and it wasn't used as a, you know, as a Lyft or an Uber vehicle or, you know, delivering Amazon packages, chances are it's got another 100,000 miles in it.
Wow. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with John Paul. He is the host of WETD's Car Doctor Show this year every Sunday at 11 a.m. You can call in to him, 781-837-4900, every Sunday if you have questions in regards to whatever his topics are, whatever he's talking about, or if you have questions. One of the things I threw out there is a conversation, and that is finding a good repair shop. And I have to say, I feel it's getting tougher and tougher because depending on who you go to, and I had a mechanic I would go to, but he decided to sell his wrenches and go into another business. Mm. So then I'm like, all right, this has been my guy for the past 20, 25 years. I had to go to somebody else. And I've gone to some individuals who they're R&R specialists. Where, oh, we'll replace that. And they'll replace it. Well, that's not it. Well, we'll try this. Well, that's my money that you're playing with.
Right.
Either that or there are shops out there that go, oh, I noticed your battery was a little low, so I replaced it and I gave you a top, you know, and they upsell you. And nobody wants that. You want somebody who's going to tell you, give you maybe a little bit of a warning as to what your vehicle might be up against. John, how do you find a good repair shop? Is the Better Business Bureau the only way to do it these days?
No, and even the Better Business Bureau, you know, what happens with the Better Business Bureau if they have a complaint? And I don't want to kind of cast a shadow over that.
Same here.
But, you know, what can sometimes happen is the Better Business Bureau, somebody complains to them, and the owner of the whatever it is, it could be a garage, it could be a plumber, it could be whatever the case is, and they say, well, you know, I, you know, went over and helped the person, so the problem went away. Well, there was a problem to start off with, so maybe that shouldn't have been the case. You know, what I like to tell people is, you know, word of mouth is the key. You know, if you can, and, you know, Facebook for what it is and social media for what it is. You know, if you live in Marshfield, you know, and you belong to the Marshfield community page, you know, put in there, you know, who do people go to for a good garage? AAA has approved auto repair garages. Look for the ASE certification, the blue seal. Those are technicians that went out and voluntarily took a test to try to stay up with the latest information out there. But I was a couple of years ago, I was in a strange town I'd never been in before, and I needed to get some work done. And I went to a local garage, and it happened to be a AAA-approved garage. Well, that was kind of one of the reasons I went there. But I went there just for an oil change. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to get an oil change. And I wanted to see how I was treated on a relatively simple thing. And, you know, were they going to try to upsell me on a bunch of stuff? Did they try to, you know, and what I came away with was, you know, they said, oh, well, your car was in here. We looked it over, and there's a CV boot that's starting to leak a little bit of grease. You're going to need to think about that. You know, you have the muffler system that's starting to get a little bit rusty. It's on an 11-year-old car, so you would expect that. But no pressure, nothing like that. The oil change was done. Everything was good. It was a good experience. So if you're not sure and you go out and you ask some friends, ask, you know, go on social, look around, whatever the case is, go to the AAA website, AAA.com/repair. You can look for AAA garages in your area. However you're going to do it, start with something simple. Start with, you know, go in and say, hey, can you rotate my tires and check the brakes while it's here? And see what it's like. That's what, when I used to do the AAA repair program, I would kind of hang around at the end of the day. And so I would go to a garage at 5 o'clock and see kind of the whole kind of interchange between the owner or the cashier or whatever the case is and what the customers, you know, took away from that. And I would get kind of a gut feeling about, this is a garage that I want to have in our AAA program, or, you know what? There were people that one after another said, what did you do? How come it's so expensive? You know, nobody wants that. You know, people want to be treated the way they treat people. So, you know, kind of look for a good garage that way. That's a good way. The other one is kind of look at the garage. You know, working on cars is a dirty job, but the dirt should be today's dirt, not last week's dirt and last month's dirt. So if you look around and you see a bunch of junk in the garage, or you look around the shop and you see a lot of cars in the parking lot that don't seem like they ever move, well, if they're not fixing those cars, chances are they're not fixing your car.
Oh, that's very interesting, that last statement. So I just have a question about an electric vehicle. I am thinking of purchasing one. And what are your thoughts on that? I know the charging station. And I also heard if you have an electric vehicle during the winter, you get less of a charge, so less mileage.
Absolutely. And you're one of about one out of three people maybe that are considering their next car to be electric. So you're kind of cutting edge right now.
Cutting edge, you hear
yeah,
that?
Yeah, cutting yeah. Edge. And what happens is people look at variety of electric cars, and electric cars range anywhere from $35,000 to, you know, $1 million, depending on what you want to buy. You know, Tesla is obviously one of the most popular cars. The Chevrolet Bolt is a very popular car because in Massachusetts you can buy that car for about $28,000. The last I looked, if you go through some of the discount programs like the green consumer, something like that in Massachusetts, where you can apply some of the rebates and there's some state incentives. But you're absolutely right. If you're going to charge up an electric car, the best way to do it is to have a home charging station, a home charging plug. Depending on how your house is set up, it might be a fairly easy installation, or you might spend a couple $1,000s to have a charging station installed at your house. If you're going to go out and buy a, say, a General Motors car, for instance, they will include the basic installation of a charging station at your house.
You know.
And what's kind of nice, and people will say to me sometimes, oh, I have to plug my car in every night. Well, what do you plug in now? Your phone, your tablet, your laptop.
Everything.
You're plugging in everything. Why not plug in your car? And if you can do it relatively easily, now all of a sudden you plug it in your car and you're literally starting the day with a full tank of electrons. So, you know, unlike most people, if you look at, you know, everybody in the audience, and we'll throw Larry in there too, you know, people drive around with, you know, about a quarter of a tank of gas. Right. That's why AAA goes out and rescues people, because people don't pay attention to the gas gauge and they run out of gas. But if you can plug in your car every morning, and even if that car only has about a 200-mile range, most people only commute 50 miles a day at the most. So they're starting the day with a full tank, and they're, you know, easily able to recharge that overnight. If you don't have a home charging station and you're plugging into the electric outlet that you plug in your weed whacker to or something, it's going to take a really, really, really long time to charge up a car. I recently drove a BMW electric car, beautiful car, had about a 350-mile range. I drove it about 200 miles one day. It took 3 days to charge up with 110 wow. volts. Now, if I had a level 2, the 240-volt charging station, like the thing that runs your stove or your electric dryer, it would have charged up overnight. So you really need to look at what, you know, what fits your lifestyle and what works out best. And you're absolutely right. In cold weather, you can lose 30 or 40% of your range. But if you have a smart charging station and a fairly smart car, while it's plugged into electricity, you can say, well, I leave for work every day at 7 a.m. So at 6:30, I want the car to warm itself up. So you get in a car and it's warm, so now you're not using the heat as much once you're underway. And maybe even to reduce electric consumption a little bit, you shut the heat off, but you turn the seat heaters on. Now all of a sudden the seat's nice and warm, and you haven't really changed the range that much. The other part of it is really hot weather. If you're driving in 90-degree heat, you're going to also lose some battery capacity as well. So you kind of have to weigh all of this out. Electric cars aren't for anyone, and electric cars are a pretty polarizing topic. This past Sunday, we had a policy guy from Consumer Reports on to talk about, you know, what's going on with the EPA and you know, the electric vehicle push. And one of our listeners from Plymouth called in and said, you know, we're being pushed into, you know, electric vehicles. And I'm like, you know, right now, it's the golden age of the automobile.
It is, yeah.
You know, you can go out and buy a gasoline car. You can go out and buy a 700-horsepower car that doesn't cost $1 million. You can buy a 700 horsepower Hellcat for, you know, under $100,000 and be the have the fastest car on the road. Or you can go out and buy a plug-in hybrid that gives you that electric range that you can plug in pretty easily and maybe go 30 or 40 miles on pure electric, and then it converts to a regular hybrid and gets, you know, 40 or 50 miles per gallon. Or you could just get a hybrid like a Prius and get really good gas mileage, or the new Maverick pickup truck. That little truck you can buy for under $25,000. It gets 40 miles per gallon. It's a hybrid, and it's a cute little truck, and it's fun to drive. So, you know, this is really the golden age of the cars, and you have a lot of choices right now. So don't let politics get in the way of it. Buy what you want.
So, John, we got like 2 minutes left. I did get a text message from a gentleman named John who actually asked about electric cars for people who live in apartments, thinking, and he's like, you know, someone who lives in the city. Quick answer on that, and then Peter has something super quick to ask, too.
There is legislation that is it will allow easier access to charging stations. If you live in an apartment and there's no access to charging, there's a fair amount of public charging, but our kind of surveys have shown that one out of five charging stations is not always working. So you kind of have to look around a little bit and make it work. Some condominiums now are actually putting in charging stations, and there's companies out there that kind of make it so they can actually make a little bit of money at it at the same time. So there's some choices.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much.
Good job.
What a great segment. Yeah. And you're going to have to be a repeat offender on the radio show maybe in about 5-6 weeks to have you back on.
And maybe I get Peter on my show. We can talk about glass.
I think Peter would love that.
And make sure that, you know, after the windshield's put in, all that advanced
recalibration stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be interesting. System. Yep. That'd
right.
be interesting.
I'll reach out.
Folks, be sure to tune in to John Paul every Sunday starting at 11 a.m. That's all the show we have this evening. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., you've been tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.